the latest thoroughbred racing news. Dial 866-454-6848 to get on board. At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
I think we're back. I think Mark, that was that was not the right intro back, but that's okay. We're back, and thanks to Dick and to Pat McKenna, it delayed our opportunity to visit with Sally Goodall, who is certainly got to be basking and celebrating off of a first half NHC Tour win, and it was worth a BC seat and bragging rights, and also the opportunity when we get to NHC in February. Of course, Sally doesn't have to travel to Vegas because that's where she and Richard live. Sally, congratulations, well done.
Thank you,
Sally. You know, you play so regularly, and this is what, you've qualified 16, 17 times?
19 times.
19 times? Oh, my God. That's unbelievable. Amazing. Amazing. And of course, Richard won. What year did Richard win?
2008.
2008. Well, the two of you are absolute just an institution when it comes to NHC. Did you set out with some design this year on the tour and tour points and trying to do something like either win the whole tour or take the first half?
Shall we see? Because lots of people has life and scores. These days, we cannot go to racetrack just like moments. Like we see, we do qualify the for big one at the Baltimore, Laura. I don't know if they have live one or they may have online. So we're going to try that one to win some good scores. And the big one, Mecca Smith, hosts a great contest there.
Take us back actually to when you first, you know, when you first started to you know, look at the handicapping as an opportunity, and you know, how much of it, you know, how much of it was your own interests, and how much was it following Richard and his interests?
I cannot hear you very well.
Oh. Talk about your interest and how you started to get drawn into handicapping.
Okay, yes. Back to 1998, my husband took me to the Penn National Racetrack. So I don't know what's the contest, what a horse. I come from China. So the first race I remember was like Chen Su has 8-1. My husband says this horse has opportunity to win, and so we bet on that one 8-1. I said, oh, easy money, easy score. So from that moment, I learned from him. So to watch the odds on the board, and for the contest or for the money, so we went to so many racetracks in the country and many contests like MGM early on, Bally's, or Santa Anita, Delma. So I went to every racetrack along with him. Then he said, watch the odds for me. I get into it. I said, oh, I can do it. I can learn. So later on, we have a program called HTR, the Horse Tech Mission,
sure,
for the resources. So I can read that one, to be honest, better than Racy Form. Give me lots of information, so easy for me to read on the computer. So I start pick my own horses, and then I bet. I had very good luck. So from there, I had a couple good winners.
No doubt. No doubt. And you know, obviously this year things are difficult. You mentioned the inability for attending and, you know, there's very few on-site contests. The Lone Star had the one, but it's not going to be a year for attending. Normally you guys are big at Del Mar, right? You're regulars during the summer at Del Mar.
Yes, correct.
We
went to Del Mar many times for the big one, and Surfside, and Santa Anita, Saratoga. We've been every racetrack, I have to be honest, Steve. My husband, our God, to travel to see every thoroughbred racetrack, and then we try play most every contest there offered to us, except these days at 9, because we are residents of Nevada, not of an online contest,
right?
We cannot play.
Right. So. Right. That's right. So that hampers. It's amazing. It's amazing you've had. That's a great point. It's amazing the success you've had given the situation, actually. And of course, now that you are the first half winner, you take the first half of the tour season, you gotta keep up, right? You gotta keep going.
Yeah, of course. We're going to keep going till I'm retired like my husband. Yeah, we're going to keep going for... it is NHC give us the good scores and then take care of us. I always have fun at NHC for the contest at Bally's or before at MGM or at Red Rock. So... And TI, they host all the best contests. I enjoy to see every horse player there. We like a family, so
yes, yep.
Have a good time. Mm-hmm.
Very true. Speaking of, you know, you mentioned the venues that have hosted NHC. Sally, how are things in Vegas right now with the facilities all trying to manage their way through the situation?
I have to be honest. And in Vegas, race sports has less people than before, and then because the football, the sports, little horses, and then people sitting apart, you know, distance. Some of them have action, but compared 6 months ago, it's down a lot.
Mm. Well, we're actually going to talk later to Rich Eng, Rich always visits with us Thursday, and I've been checking in with him too about this, you know, how everybody is managing. Well, in the meantime, you with a terrific first half on the tour, and it gets you a BCBC entry for Breeders' Cup. And do you talk about the preference or how you approach the live money versus the NHC format and the pick and pray formats versus the, you know, the live bankroll?
We do like pick and pray because I can pick up horses, a handicap at the morning. I pick in, then I can go shopping, do something else. Life money bankroll is exciting. So if we have a couple good shots, of course everyone likes to win the money. So either way, we both love that.
Well, both you and Richard, just so familiar on the scene for National Handicapping, National Horse Player Championship, both versions, and looking forward to seeing how the second half of the year unfolds as well. Sally, great to connect. Congratulations. Good luck in the BCBC. We'll be watching you on the leaderboard, and we certainly hope we're all going to be able to be together in February at Bally's in Vegas for NHC.
Oh, yeah, I love to meet you in person on February next year.
we gotta knock on wood. Let's hope that we can all come together the way NHC has been bringing people together. 19 qualifications for Sally Goodall, and a very good first half, terrific performance. Sally, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. Look forward and NHC next year.
And who knows? You might we might be talking to you after Breeders' Cup. Go win the BCBC.
Oh yeah, that'd be nice.
I'd love it.
Okay.
I love it. Best to Richard too. Thank you, Sally.
I will. Thanks.
There's fun, Sally Goodall, everybody, and she and Richard just. They look at that, 19 different times. So we'll check in with Rich later and see what his thoughts are too about where things stand in Vegas. It seems difficult, and there's Sally kind of confirming. Tony Black is going to join us, and actually Dick mentioned one of the stories and one of the things I was going to bring up with Tony. Yesterday when I spoke to Mike Arrow off the air, and Mike had said that the news was coming that there wasn't going to be a Pennsylvania Derby or a Cotillion, and I don't think anybody, that didn't come as a surprise. So I was going to talk to Tony a little bit. A lot of venues using those monies toward the overnight purse structure and the rank and file horsemen, and makes perfect sense. So we'll talk to Tony in a little bit here. Going to catch up with Steve Haskin, get Travers' thoughts from him. A couple of quick notes about yesterday's Saratoga sequence, and you had that Summer Colony Stake. I heard Andy Serling invoked his famous "They knew," and Nona Madeline for the violas, and Todd Bletcher, and For those that haven't noticed, Todd Pletcher winning with alacrity at this meet, and on a regular basis with all kinds of horses too. Although later in the day, the heralded first time starter, Black Magic Woman, she did not. She was unable to fulfill expectation. She got caught late and run down. But Nona Madeline, the four-year-old, the Candy Ride, Windstar bred, and Golden Award, had to settle for second. And what was surprising was that Nona Madeline was bet down to favoritism, and basically 6-5, and Golden Award was 3-2. And at a glance, at a handicapping glance, you really kind of expected Golden Award, although she was coming off the ease in the Ogden Phipps, but still, no match in this spot for Nona Madeline, who wins off. You had Ray Handel with another winner, and Ray's having a nice meet and is plenty capable. Rosa Veloce, a Girolamo out of a hard-spun mare. And, the hard-spun mare, Spuntastic, she won a couple of times. She was a quick sprinter. And that was maybe the hint. 7-2 for Rosa Veloce, and favored No Mo Spending, that had, the advantage of a start under her belt, the Stop Charging Maria filly for Randy Block. And Six Columns, and Ian Wilkes, who been sending out nothing but live horses, but in this case had to settle for third, beaten two lengths, give or take. But good job, Ray Handel, for Blue Streak Racing. And Ray, he himself is involved in this horse. I mentioned Control Group that Rad Ortiz put right into the race and got bet. This was the latest Noda Brothers partnered with Zilla that won, and I think that's win number 5. Is that right? I think it, I want to say 5 wins at the meet. Let me see. Is that, yeah, 5 wins, and a Travers starter as well. You had the maiden that upset to a fairly good number, 15-2. Love on the Run, a Gainsway bred, Anthony Beck, of course, the Empire Maker filly. And Love on the Run, second-time starter, Bill Mott, with Junior Alvarado. And he really sat chilly on Love on the Run and let Black Magic Woman do a lot of the heavy lifting. 22-2, 45-1, was taking pressure from another first-time starter, Soft and Lovely, the Nacho Correas. And Nacho swinging into action this week at Saratoga. He's got a couple on Saturday as well that'll certainly come up. But anyway, Love on the Run. And when Alvarado asked, this filly responded. Very nice. Out of an old Trieste mare and breaks the maiden and does it for 17-20. And Brian House, I think this is, what, his second starter? Second or third? How many has he started at the meet? Brian House. Heavenly Sis. This was his third starter and ran very well. You know, he sends out just a handful, but it can be well spotted. There was an interesting development out of the 8th race yesterday, and you had Intrepid Heart, Santana aboard for the second time, coming out of that Churchill win. And of course, Intrepid Heart last year, a classic trail type that was 8th in the Belmont, only beaten 5. But Bob and Luana Lowe, $750,000 yearling purchase, dipped in here for $50,000. And the claim, there was a claim, and the claim was voided. There were 2 vet claim voids, because Dumpf also was claimed, and that was voided. But Intrepid Heart, I got to get the specifics, because certainly finished beautifully under Santana and won well. So not see what the follow-up is there. And then you had those 2 races off the turf as the 9th and the 10th, and Foxtail, who was very bettable on his dirt form, on her dirt form, the Mizzenmast mare for Mertgen Canton Marcy. And I'll tell you, that's what, win number 3? Yeah, win number 3. His horses, they look good, and he wins. $7 tote on Foxtail. Traipsing was bet essentially as if the race was still on turf. And how often do we discuss this with Andy specifically about, don't get caught up in that. So Nightcap, a win for Dermot Magner, Her Ways, and beat the 4-5 shot of David Donks and the Generazios Beyond Brown. So considering there were 3 races off the turf, it was a good day of racing, actually. Tony Black standing by. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You know what? It's lucky I listen to you, because I would never know what's going on in racing if it wasn't for you, because I don't get out there lately as much as I should. So you've got an avid listener here, because I want to keep up with what's going on out there.
Well, I appreciate it, Tony. And we also, of course, use you for, plenty of Mid-Atlantic news and views and the jock situations. There was more jockey hijinks going on when it came to some steward decisions in Saratoga. Don't know if you saw everything that went on up here this past week, but I also had the the news that came up earlier with Parks, logically bypassing the Pennsylvania Derby and the Cotillion this year, monies that'll be better served in the overnight purse structure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that was a smart move. Maybe they could have kept, I think the Gallant Bob was also canceled, which maybe could have been rescheduled at a different date and maybe be used for some prep for Breeders' Cup races. But it really, with the situation with the pandemic and everything that's going on and the rescheduling of the Derby and of course, the Belmont Preakness, it only made sense because you wouldn't have drawn the kind of field that was expected and that you drew in past years. So it was a good move, to cancel those two races. It's a lot of money. My only question is, when are they going to start calculating the money from the casino and get the purses up and back to what they were prior to the pandemic? The casino is open. I know it limits the amount of people that are allowed in there, but I was just wondering when the horsemen are going to start receiving the purse structure that was previous to the pandemic. I guess it's in the near future.
Don't know the horsemen, that all has to do with the horsemen's
representation.
Yeah, I mean,
it brings it to light. And sometimes I wonder if they're sitting on their hands or what's going on. But, I'm kind of an outsider when it comes to that. And I've been critical of some of the things that horsemen representation has done. And I've been critical of some things that management has done. I even made a statement, which I'm sure wasn't appreciated. Racing at Parks isn't third rate. Sometimes the decisions that upper management and their way of doing business is third rate. But racing's not third rate. We've had nice horses come out of Parks. We have horses and PA breds that can go any place in the country and be competitive. So it can't be just third-rate racing. But sometimes the management decisions are third-rate and management's attitude is third-rate. But I guess that's not well-received. And sometimes you understand me better than other people, Steve, because I'm not afraid to say what's on my mind. And sometimes what's on my mind is not, like I said, well-received.
Well, I'm not to turn and take take out the jock side of this equation, but you should probably address the Hector Caballero suspension too. I mean, the stewards, this goes back, of course, to last week, and Caballero passed the wire and essentially waxed the mount by the name of Belongs to Babe across the nose, gets suspended for 10 days, Tony. I mean, this doesn't do anybody any favors, and it puts the jocks under under a negative light, and it also again gives rise to critics of the game, essentially giving them ammunition.
At this particular time, everybody's under pressure, and I don't agree with giving someone a suspension for an incident similar to that. But the misuse of the whip, and the whip is being so criticized at this point in time that maybe they overreacted, and there's a possibility they did. You're not supposed to make any contact with a horse's head and the whip. I mean, but tapping them on the nose, sometimes the whip, even if it is after the race, if a horse is getting in or getting out, sometimes the whip is a device of assistance when it comes to steering. Now, if you do it out of frustration or because you're dissatisfied with something that went on in the race and you're taking out your frustrations on the horse and you hit him near the face.
Yeah,
or the head,
is what he did.
Then, you know what? Then there should be, forget the initial warning. go right to a penalty of a high fine or days or a combination of both. You know, if you're not satisfied with the performance or there's something that happened to you in the running of the race or something that that horse did in the running of the race that didn't help you get the most out of that horse, then that's out of frustration. Then pull them up. And, you know, I've ridden 34,000 races, and I can say, honestly, I've never struck a horse in the head out of frustration. Now, I might have used the whip to assist me in guiding the horse because the bit no longer was effective. The reins, you've maximized the amount of pressure you can put on the bit through the reins, and you're totally depleted when it comes to energy and force that you can exert on the bit. So maybe out of a safety issue, you smack them in the muzzle of the nose, in the soft spot of the nose. But out of frustration, boy, I can't in any way excuse that.
No. We've had incidents like this in the past, and everybody has to be on their. Not just best behavior, that's trite. Everybody has to be, you know, very aware of the scrutiny that the game is under. And, you know, especially right now where, you know, the rest of the sports world is sort of limping along. But you have to control yourself, essentially, and be, period.
You're an athlete. You're supposed to have total control over your performance. You know, if it at times, you know, you things don't go right, you absorb the circumstances that you're being confronted with and get through it, and don't in any way express yourself with any physical emotion, hitting another rider, hitting another horse, or striking a horse improperly with your stick, or past the wire, before the wire, anytime during the race. We are being scrutinized by many organizations, PETA being one that, you know, would love to see racing go by the wayside. We've had incidents in California that we've been dealing with, and we're under the gun. But, you know, it's not really under the gun if you're a true professional athlete. If you're dealing with your performance in the way that a professional deals with his performance. You know, when you ride a horse, and there's one thing that I learned it in high school when I was wrestling, whether I won or lost, you know, you got to turn that one loose. If you lost, go to the next one. I tell my sons when it comes to athletics and when it comes to just general things that happen in life, because if I ask my son in out of the clear blue, or you ask him, what's your father's most favorite expression? And it's an expression that I learned to live with being a jockey. Get over it. Go to the next one. And my sons will tell you they've heard that a million times. But you know what? Get over it. Go to the next one. Because especially like being a jockey, I learned in high school being a wrestler. And wrestling's the only reason I graduated with the help of a very important math teacher and coach that I had, which was Miller Preston, and we visit him still to this day. And I told him, I said, you didn't teach me much algebra. He says, I didn't have you for algebra. I had you for geometry. I said, well, that's how much geometry I know. I said, but I learned one thing from you. Two things, really. I learned how not to quit something you're supposed to finish, because I was ready to quit high school in my junior year. And he says, but I made a deal with you. If you came to school at 10 o'clock, galloped horses at Garden State and at Liberty Bell, then you got to school, went out for wrestling, you would graduate. And he stuck to his word. That's how I graduated. But he taught me another thing, not just how to not quit something you're supposed to finish. He taught me how to conduct yourself as an athlete. Get over it and go to the next one. And I've carried that out through my entire career. Because, you know, you ride 7-8 horses a day, you mess up the first two. Don't let it mess up the next 6 you ride. So it's a good way to conduct yourself as an athlete and as a jockey especially, because we're out there several times a day most of the time. So you better not carry the bad performance outside with you for the next performance, or you'll mess that one up too. And you better not show frustration because you made a mistake, or the horse didn't react right, or someone made a mistake that was alongside you and in some way interfered with your forward progress. Because if you take the frustration out on anything, animal or another rider, there's a penalty to be paid. And I guess Hector figured it out, I hope. And sometimes you learn the hard way. But frustration, there's no room for being a frustrated athlete out there on the racetrack and displaying the frustration.
Well put, Tony. I appreciate it. When it came to the two decisions that we had on Saturday here in New York, one was, I thought, you know, not frivolous, but it was going to be dismissed immediately, which was when Vexatious and Midnight Bisou kind of came together just a tiny bit, and that's just, you know, kind of race riding. But the incident in the Bowling Green, Tony, and whether you saw it, I can certainly describe what, you know, what was involved. And it's a horse, you know, that's kind of brushing by, but immediately as he's coming abreast of the leaders, sees that opening and wants to gravitate down, you know, toward the hedge or toward the rail to that open space. And, you know, crowded, it wasn't an intentional herding issue. It just, you know, he absolutely crowded the horse to his inside, which then created a chain reaction. And, you know, it was an unfortunate circumstance, but explain what's happening when horses are doing that and what a jock can do to try to mitigate it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Most of the time, what gets you in trouble out there is, of course, you're trying hard. You try too hard, and you're aiming for a spot that's moving a little faster than you are. You're going to eventually catch it, but you have to have patience. And when you don't have patience and you try to manipulate another rider's position by coming in or going out and aiming for that open space, you know, sometimes you're going to cause a chain reaction. The chain reaction is that rider that you're coming in on, especially if you're coming in, because coming in, you know, you've got one other obstacle, the inside fence or horses to the inside of you. Going out, you got a little more leeway heading out. It's kind of hurting, but don't overdo it. You know, you can drift out a little bit, but there's one thing that you don't have to worry about is putting somebody through the fence, because the fence is quite a ways from you. But there are other horses that you may be compromising their forward motion. Now, coming in is absolutely, in my eyes, more dangerous or creates more of an obstacle than going out. So what happens is when you're going in, a rider to the inside of you might be reacting to your movement. Now, he doesn't know where your movement is absolutely going to stop. So he's heading in and might even, you know, compromise horses to the inside of him because he's overreacting to you. And maybe he isn't overreacting to you because maybe you're not going to stop coming in. So you coming in is a situation where you can cause more interference than hurting or going out. But, you know, I didn't see the incident, but I guess, you know, I understand riders' mentality, especially when you get to the 316th pole and you're looking for that spot if you're in a crowd of horses. You're looking for that opening and you're going to head your horse for that opening. And if it is towards the inside, you really have to be cautious that you're not going to cause a chain reaction, stack everybody, stack the field up. You know, I didn't see that one, but I understand the circumstances. And you know what? On occasion, stewards make mistakes, and they've done it over the years, whether it's New York, Pennsylvania. I wound up being involved in one. The stewards called me after the horse town said it wasn't a unanimous decision. And I Lou Baranella never came down. It was
Tony
Charlie Robbins. Yeah.
Tony, hold on. We're having trouble. You're coming in, you're in and out with the telephone reception.
Oh, I have this now. I'm sitting down.
All right, stay there.
Yeah. Okay.
No good, Tony. You got to find find a better spot.
Let me see. I haven't had any of them into the other room, but we've never had this problem before.
No, I know.
Let me see what's going on in the...
There you go. There you go. Stay where you are. No. No. Something's amiss. Yeah.
This smells good?
No.
Jeez, But I had an interesting...
Oh, I know. But you know what, Mark? Do me a favor. Who knows? Recall Tony. Hang up, Tony, and let him redial. I know that there's plenty of people that post storm here are still dealing with issues. But I do want to hear Tony's story here. That takedown of Sadler's Joy, it's kind of more, more frustrating, I think, to some degree, because he's a horse that, you hate to see a horse like this that comes with those runs and, doesn't win as often, as he seems capable of. But, it's the consistency too, like we talked about that. The non-DQ back in June. We talked about this with Andy on Tuesday. The first defense with Therapist and Majestic Dunhill. So, all right. We got Tony back.
Yeah, have this, Steve. We come
all right.
Better?
A little bit, yeah. All right. A little bit.
Okay, here was the interesting story. You know, sometimes the stewards' decisions aren't unanimous. There's three stewards, and two of them can take you down. One of them can think that the situation didn't deserve a disqualification. Now, I was involved in a similar incident like that, where I was taken down, and the steward, Lou Baranella, called me one day, and he said, after the disqualification, he said, it wasn't unanimous. Charlie Robbins and Carl Hampert, but they did interference that warranted a disqualification. So he said, he didn't actually say it. I said, well, I'm going to appeal because I don't think it should have come down. So I appealed it, and you know what? The commission overturned it. Now, that didn't do the betters any good, but it certainly eliminated my 7-day suspension, and it was a 7-day suspension, and... one of the stewards said that I was disrespectful in the movie room, and they were thinking about giving me a further suspension, and I wasn't disrespectful, and it was lucky that there was other riders in the room, because Rick Wilson said he's never made that statement or comment, and, they questioned the days that were given for disrespect, and I didn't. I didn't display any sign of disrespect. I disagreed with them, but I didn't display any sign of disrespect. Well, I beat both sets of days, and the number was put back up. Didn't help the betters any, but the owner and the trainer of the horse,
yeah.
Charlie Badley, he was happy we got the number put back up. And I'll tell you who represented me in the commission, because at the time, Richie Phillips was the lawyer for the, NFL? He also...
Oh, yeah, sure,
Richie
sure.
Phillips. He
yeah.
represented me. He said, they'll never beat us after Weigel. You better have done it. He went to the committee. They overturned the steward's decision. Stewards make mistakes, too, whether you're in New York, Pennsylvania, I don't care where you're at, New Jersey, and I can vouch for it because I was absolutely involved in one. New York, they've made
How about
mistakes.
That?
In fact, I saw an article that was written, and it was something about a disqualification with Jerry Bailey and some other riders were involved. I saw it on Facebook. I didn't read the entire article. But they actually said, we blew it. So you got to give stewards credit when they back up and they say, we made a mistake. And that was a New York disqualification. We blew it was titled of the article.
How often, you've been around, obviously, for 50 years. How many overturn appeals have you seen happen? Because I don't see them that often that I can even think of.
I'm right offhand, I can say you're absolutely right. And the only reason I remember that one that I just stated was because I was directly involved.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of them that are overturned, and there's not many. I mean, stewards sit up there. They have time to make a decision. If it's a questionable decision, I think the stewards stand a lot of times would rather leave it as is, and then if there's going to be appeals of their decision, then at least they didn't affect the better, you know, and they might affect purse distribution, and maybe the person that they left up does come down. I'm sure that's happened also when it comes to appeals. But at least the better isn't affected tremendously when he sees his horse go across the wire in front. But I can't think of any specific incident. And like you said, you don't see many of them, Steve, over time.
No. Now, this is actually, it's funny, this discussion's provoked a few responses from some people that manage jockeys for a living and observe what goes on in New York with interest. I'm not going to call it pilot error, per se, as much as, you know, seemingly some riders that use horses as guided missiles, more or less, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. We call them kamikaze.
There you go. There's one interpretation. Tony, appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week. Watch what's going on this weekend. We got Travers, and we got some 3-year-olds. We got, you know, Todd Beatty coming back as well with that nice filly of his that had the nice upset last month or 6 weeks ago. Very, very interested in the Latruska. See if she can run back opportunity to win a grade one.
Well, he's definitely made a name for himself in this business, Todd Beatty, and he does a great job, and he must die. He only rode a few horses for him, but he must do something right because he certainly wins at a steady rate. And wish him luck with his big filly. But we'll be listening, Steve, and I will watch those races this week, with a great deal of interest. But listening, and maybe I'll know what's going on next week more than I did this week.
That's all right, Tony. You know what's going on, whether you do or you don't. It doesn't matter. I said Latruska. It's not Latruska. It's the other one. Oh, my gosh. What is her name?
I can't think of it. I've had an excuse why I can't think of horses' names at times. I've hit the ground enough times, too many concussions. It's a good excuse. But what's your excuse?
too many sets of PPs. I'm looking at too many horses, too many races.
You got a good excuse, too. You take care. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening, Steve. And, one last thing.
Yeah.
Mom and me are making what they call yemisi. It's the Greeks, the stuffing for the tomatoes and the peppers. And we're having stuffed tomatoes and peppers either tomorrow night. You actually took me away from the stove when I was browning the guts of the tomato and the rice and the breadcrumbs and the onion. And I got to get back to the stove right now because we got to stuff the tomatoes so we can cook them for a while. Us Greeks, we cook now, Steve.
Unbelievable. Tony Black, everybody, the one and only. I love it. Stay right here because Steve Haskin is standing by. And we'll talk to Steve about last weekend and Whitney, as well as what is looming on Saturday with the Travers. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
How's retirement?
I never retired. So I was retired, but I never retired.
Exactly.
Let's put it this way. I was temporarily retired.
Exactly.
In fact, being you ask.
Uh-oh. Here it is. Here it is.
Probably next Tuesday, there will be an announcement on Facebook, and I will be returning the hundreds of emails from people who want to be informed. But I will announce, and don't say I'm coming out of retirement for the third time, because I never retired the first time. I just resigned the first time. I was, well, I don't want to use the word canned, but I was terminated the second time, and I'm just bouncing back.
Nice.
So it's a place where no one will guess, but it's a place that I've had a very good and close association with, and it's going to be a lot of fun there. And there will be, and I can't use the name, but there will be two more Derby Dozens, but they won't be called Derby Dozens because I can't use it. It's not mine to use.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So it will be close. It will be close to it, but there will be two more Derby rankings, and there'll be a full Derby quote. People are going to call it Derby Dozen anyway. We're starting back. It'll be basically the same thing in a different place. With hopefully a lot of people will follow. It's not a site that most people would just venture to, but a lot of people do.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. There might even be a second website too, but that's still to be determined. But stay tuned on Tuesday. I assume it's going to be on Tuesday. So,
well, we will watch, and it'll include, obviously, Steve, it'll include the Travers recapping, and we'll talk about Travers in a minute, but you were up for a good part of Whitney weekend, then you headed back back to Jersey. Some thoughts about what we saw over the weekend and what it means for the Breeders' Cup Classic Trail.
Well, if you want to start there.
Yeah.
The Whitney was a good race. I don't know that it proved too much, only because, the pace was so ridiculously slow. Improbable. There was no way in the world he was going to lose that race when you saw those fractions. When a horse like that goes in, 49 and 113 and it's fractions like that. And, let's put it this way. Tom's de Tot came home the last 3/8 and 34-3. Mm. Got beat 2.5 lengths. The closest had no shot in there. And he even said, though, after his minute, I was a little bit disappointed in Code of Honor. I just thought he'd show a little bit more. He just didn't do anything. Closed like Tom's de Tot did and got beat a few lengths, I can understand that. But when they turned for home, there really wasn't anything there. It was just basically an even race, finishing fourth. And I thought he would be, a lot sharper coming off the Met Mile. But I don't know. It's hard to figure out what that race meant in the long run, the Breeders' Cup Classic. But now we've got Maximum Security back in the fold, which is great. Listen, there's a lot of good horses. Are there any horses I'm going to be afraid of? No. I'm a big Maximum Security fan. I'd love to see him keep going and see where he shows up next. I guess Pacific Classic, but we'll see. And let's not forget, if you're looking for a Breeders' Cup Classic horse right now, I'm going to go back to a horse that I loved last year who looks like he's just finding himself, is Tacitus. I don't know who's going to beat him in the Woodward going a mile and a quarter. So Tacitus is a horse I'm definitely keeping an eye on. But all in all, listen, it's a good bunch of older horses. Is it a great bunch? No, it's not a great bunch. But if we get a good infusion of three-year-olds, not that there's a great depth there either, but if the big-name three-year-olds continue on into
right.
the Classic and they have good form, then they'll integrate very well into the Breeders' Cup Classics scene. But going a mile and a quarter with Keeneland, I'm still not giving up on Code of Honor. I still think he's a very good horse. He just ran a little. He ran a little flat. It happens sometimes. It happens in Saratoga, and sometimes it happens when you're coming off a very, very fast mile, like he did. You know, coming off that that Met mile where they ran really fast in there, and he ran a tremendous race, I thought, there. So I don't know. Maybe it was a little flat. We'll see what happens. I guess he'll probably come back in the Jockey Club Gold Cup and then go into Classic. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him bounce back. I think he'll like Keeneland. So I'm certainly not giving up on him. And if you want, I don't know if you want to look back at the Shared Belief, which was another very interesting race. And you know, I know there are a lot of Honor AP fans out there who absolutely love this horse, and you know, people have great respect for, and they, you know, they still like him a lot. I have my concerns. I have my concerns only because I'm going to play devil's advocate on this, because it was kind of a bittersweet race, let's say. So if you take the bitter first, you know, you're going to have a lightly raced horse going into the Derby, number one. And he's going to go into the Derby off of 1 1/16 race in 13 weeks. Now, again, you can't compare it to the first Saturday in May Derby. It's a totally different ballgame now. Horses are coming into the race. Yeah, King of Yelmo's coming in off a 4-month layoff. You're going to have horses like Soli Volante coming in off an 8-week, 11-week layoff. You're going to have horses coming from the Haskell in there off a, what is it, 8-week layoff. I mean, if the Derby was in May, you wouldn't see any of that. So you can't compute it. So we really don't know how these horses are going to run, because there's going to be so many horses coming in off layoffs, which normally you don't see in the Derby. However, if you're going to have a 1 1/16 race in 13 weeks, you have to figure that you better get a lot out of that race. At least get a stiff race in there and show something, because you're going to have to get fit. You're going to have to get fit to go 1 1/4. And especially when that 1 1/16 race is against three opponents, one of which didn't belong in the race, was a 34-1 shot. So I thought he was just going to romp in that race, to tell you the truth. I wasn't crazy about either of the two Baffert horses, and I certainly wasn't crazy about the 34-1 shot. And he made his move on the turn at quarter pole. He looked like he was home free. I looked at 1,000 words on the front end, going past the 5/16 pole before he even got the head of stretch. He was whipped three times and just really not doing anything. I even mentioned to Joan, I said, well, forget 1,000 words. Cezanne, I've never been a huge fan as far as a Derby horse. I think he'll turn out to be a good horse, but not at 1 1/4. And so I really wasn't crazy about him. And then again, he had the 34-1 shot. I said, well, there's nobody to beat here. All he has to do is keep running, and he's going to draw away from these horses. And, you know, he's got that big, long stride to him. And when they turned into the stretch and he switched leads, there was no push. There was no acceleration. I said, oh, wow, what is going on here? Now, I know visually it looked like he was coming on again towards the end, but the 8,000 words, it's a so-so horse. If he has Baffert, he's not in the same class as Uncle Chuck. And at least that's the way I figured. Talking to Baffert, he didn't come out and say that, but that's the way it looks. And, you know, he's a one-pace horse who has a tendency to pull himself up in the finish and win by a small margin. So it didn't surprise me that Honor AP got close. But he finished a half a length in front of the 34-1 shot, who was also closing. And the four horses within like two lengths of each other. And I know I got I don't know how I got a 104 buyer. The third horse, you know, had nothing numbers going into the race. So how he wound up getting a big number is beyond me. But anyway, if you look at the race from a visual standpoint, I don't know if he got enough out of it. He just didn't show me enough. I didn't see anything there. He just, like I said, he closed ground visually, but I don't think he really closed ground. I just think 1,000 words was coming back at him. Anyway, that's the bitter. The sweet is, if you want to ignore this race and give him an excuse, the one thing about him, as you can see, he's got a big, big, long stride to him. And he broke last, and he was running fourth, which is okay. Mike Smith took him wide, 3 to 4 wide, which is still fine. The small Austrian, you can afford to lose ground. But I was really surprised to see Mike Smith make that big move on, you know, that early move. And before you know it, in like in 2 seconds, he's a half a length off of 1,000 words. And a horse like that, you really don't want to make two moves with him. He's just got too big a long stride, and, you know, the pace is slow. You make that big move with him, and then he sits with him down the back stretch, and he sits with him and lets him settle even more. And then Cezanne comes up, moves inside of him, put pressure on him from the inside. Then he makes that second move. And when a horse like that has to make a second move, I just think he couldn't sustain it. If he had just let him stay where he was and run in fourth, you know, two and a half lengths off the lead, let him make one move and just keep going. But it's possible. I'm not saying it is, but it's possible that first move took just enough out of him that he just couldn't continue with the second move, going a mile and a 16th, which is not his distance. So I'll give him that. The question is, did he get enough out of it to come back now in the Kentucky Derby in whatever it's going to be, 18, 8, 19, 20 horse field or whatever, going a mile and a quarter with that one nothing race in 13 weeks? That's the question. Can he win the Derby? I guess anybody can win the Derby this year. I shouldn't say anybody, but of the top four or five contenders, sure he can win. But it's gonna take a good training job by Sheriffs to get him to go a mile and a quarter off that race. I just don't know how much he got out of it. What was your take on that race? I mean, that's just my take, but
I didn't come away as concerned or as negative about, you know, what the downside might be, just given, you know, Sheriffs and the fact that he was, you know, coming back off the break and was going a distance that didn't necessarily play into, you know, his strengths. And I'll trust in Sheriffs here. And John had, you know, he had really, I thought, had given off some, you know, some tea leaf reading that he was concerned on the distance front, on the mile and a 16th, not being, you know, really what this horse is meant to do, and, you know, what the horse had already done, and his concerns about the way the racetrack had kind of changed from when they first got down there. And he telegraphed early in the week, you know, when he said, I don't know what kind of racetrack we're, you know, where we are, given how, you know, thick and heavy it is, versus when they first got down there. And then Baffert said that at least last week, as they got, you know, into the weekend, the track had tightened up somewhat. But still, Sheriffs, I thought, gave off plenty of indication that, you know, that don't expect, you know, the A++ effort here. I would not be worried about him, you know, when you get to Churchill.
Well, I can understand all that. And, all the points you made make sense, especially knowing John Sheriffs. And you might not be expecting an A++ race, but I thought going in that a B race would win that race. I mean, he towered over that field. I mean, I looked at the race and I said, who's going to beat him? I mean, I didn't like the long shot. When you get a 34-1 shot in a four-horse field, that's pretty bad.
That's a big shot.
I didn't like Cezanne at all. And 1,000 words, I mean, to me, he was not in the whatever form he was in early in his career, but he just never really moved on. I said, to me, it looks like all he has to do is just run around the racetrack and beat these horses. To me, he's like six, seven lengths better than these horses. So, you know, I figure if he just drew up one by two lengths easy or something like that, yeah, that's fine. But I just didn't think he wouldn't show that punch in turning for home. I just wanted to see a little bit of acceleration. When he changed leads, when you get a horse with big stride like that, when they change leads, you can tell in a half a second whether they're going to be in contention, whether they're going to do something. And I watched for him to change leads because I was just waiting for him to blow by 1,000 words. He was already under the whip. And if you look, Honore P was being pretty hard ridden on the turn already at the 3/8 pole. So I just waited for him to change leads. And he did, and it was like nothing there. I mean, it was like no push, no acceleration. That's the part that has me a little concerned. But again, like I said, can he win the Derby? Sure, he can win the Derby. Yeah, I think he's a very good horse. And again, I trust John Sheriffs to put enough bottom into him. But again, he's going to be trying things that horses in the past never tried. Nobody goes into the Derby with one race in 13 weeks, a mile and 16th, no less. If you ask me who's the last horse to win the Kentucky Derby off a mile and 16th prep, I couldn't even answer it. I can't even think of any. So we just, I don't know. But we'll see what happens. He's still a very good horse. I'm just not quite as high on him as I was before, only because of the concerns now of getting ready to go a mile and a quarter. But we'll see what happens. It's going to be a crazy Derby. I don't know how we're going to handicap it. Like I said, horses coming in there off all kinds of weird layoffs. And
what about King Guillermo?
They're having run for 4 weeks, which is unheard of.
What about King Guillermo?
That's what I said. I talked about him. Here's a horse that, to me, is as talented as anybody. I'm a huge King Guillermo fan. I mean, his races at Tampa was fantastic. And he came back. I thought he ran really well at Oakland. I mean, I think he ran a very good race. And I said, well, this is a legitimate Derby horse. I love his pedigree. He's got a gorgeous head to him, beautiful eye, beautiful stride, moves well. He's got everything. 4 months? I mean, if this Derby was in the first Saturday in May, that would be equivalent of a horse making his first start of the year in the Derby. And I know you can't compare it, but 4 months? We'll see. But do we really know? How are we going to handicap these horses going into the Derby? Can you love King Guillermo? Can you hate him? Are you somewhere in between? You can be anywhere. You know, your feelings about a horse like that can be all over the place. Because so many horses are going to be trying to do something that horses have never done. There's going to be a lot of horses. All the horses going in there off an 8-week layoff, okay? In the last 105 years, two horses have won the Derby off of as much as a 6-week layoff. And one of them was Needles back in 1956. So, again, it's hard to equate history into that because of when the Derby's being run. But still, 8 weeks, 11 weeks, 13 weeks, one race in 13 weeks, 4 months. Good luck handicapping this Derby, and we'll see what happens in the Travelers. I mean, we're going to have another precedent here. How many horses have gone into the Derby coming off a mile and a quarter prep race? None. The only horse that had Derby winner that had run at a mile and a quarter was Canyonero. And like I said in the past show, he followed that up with 3 6.5 furlong races, and that was in Venezuela. So we've never seen anything like this. We'll never see it again. You're not going to see any horses coming into the Derby off a mile and a quarter prep.
No.
So it's going to be a fascinating Derby, but it's going to be very, very hard to handicap, I think.
Well, let's see what happens here, first of all, between Tis the Law and Uncle Chuck, principally. And then let's talk about Sunday, too, Steve. Fold that in. And you really haven't fleshed out some of the unusual options in Travers. I want you to touch on maybe some intrigue there. Country Grammar, and you've talked positively about Caro Caro. But... It seems that Art Collector is being kind of shunted in these preliminary Derby discussions. And also, by the way, I do have to go over the field and the number going into the weekend on your Derby future wager, round 7. And the Derby future option, which will close before the Ellis Park Derby. So adding some intrigue.
Right. Yeah, that's gonna make things very interesting. Listen, I agree about Art Collector. I mean, Art Collector could very easily be number one. I know Tis the Law right now looks like he stands alone. But if you're trying to beat Tis the Law, or if you're trying to maybe not bet him in the future wager or not include him, I'm always high on that horse. I've been high on him. I've had him number one all year. But if you're trying to beat him, and again, that's the only way I'm putting this, you can say to yourself, well, who's he really beaten? I mean, if you look at his last race in the so-called Belmont Stakes, he beat Dr. Post, who came back and, ran a so-so race in the Haskell. Again, that race probably didn't suit him at all. He's probably better than that, but I don't know if Dr. Post is a mile and a quarter horse, so we're not really sure how good he is. His reputation is based mostly on his second to Tinsel Law. He won the Florida Derby. He beat Chivalry, who was coming off sprint races, and he hasn't won since. He's coming off a terrible race. So I'm saying, if you're trying to beat Tinsel Law, if you're trying to find a reason to bet against him, you can say to yourself, I don't know, you know, who's he beat? I mean, who are the top horses he's beaten all year? He beat FTA Indian, who may be the best horse he's faced. But FTA Indian basically is a miler. And, you know, they ran off from the field into a match race, and they got the better of him. FTA Indian, the only race he won the Fountain Youth when he had the whole race his own way. So, again, it's a question. It's a legitimate question. Am I holding it against him? No, because I don't know who anybody's beaten this year. But I do have to say that I, from a visual standpoint, I got to put Art Collector right up close with him. You know, also a big, big fan of his. And boy, would I love to see Tommy Drury win the Kentucky.
It'd be unbelievable. It would be unbelievable.
I mean, it's just a great, great story how he got the horse. And, you know, boy, does anybody deserve it more than a guy like that? So I'm really, really high on that horse. And I can't find any flaws in that horse. I mean, his last four races have been brilliant. And if you look at his stride, you look at his professionalism, he does everything right. He's got the tactical part of it down pat. He can run. He can beat you on a lead. He can beat you coming from two or three lengths off. He can beat you coming from seven or eight lengths off. Those are the kind of horses you want to see in the Derby. Because a lot of times horses are not where they want to be in the Derby. A horse that likes to run second or third could be running eighth or ninth, and they have to overcome that. So he's the one horse in the race that I would say to myself, I don't care where he is. Wherever he is, I'm confident, because I know he can win from anywhere. So in that respect, I think he should be, you know, right up there, right behind Tinsel Law, very close to him, that people should be talking about him as a major threat. Now let's see. You know what he does in the Ellis Park Derby. He could come back and get beat in the Ellis Park Derby. And again, you have to change your opinion. But, you know, we'll see what happens. These are prep races. If he runs a big race in the Ellis Park Derby and gets beat, it's not going to bother me. Like I said, he won four races in a row. And, you know, there was some thought of, you know, well, should we train up to the race? No, you know, don't train up to the race. You run him in the race. It's a, you know, it's a final prep race. If he gets beat, he gets beat. You know how many horses have won the Derby coming off a loss?
Sure, of course.
I mean, so many of them have come off a loss. So I'm just saying that we'll see what happens there. Because there are going to be some good horses in the Ellis Park Derby. And, you know, another thing, looking ahead to the Kentucky Derby, and, you know, we'll find out more in what happens in the Travers. But this could be the most unusual group of jockeys riding in the Kentucky Derby, because, I mean, what jockeys in New York, I know several already who are not going, top riders. What jockey's going to want to go sit down in Churchill Downs for 12 days and miss out on five grade ones and five grade twos in Saratoga and a possibility of, you know, winning the jockey title to ride in a two-minute race? And then you have to wait after the race before you can go back and ride again. Do you realize how much money these jocks are going to be losing, especially the New York riders? Like I said, I've heard of two major riders that have already said they're not going to Kentucky. They're not going to give up all these races at Saratoga. You know, it's five grade ones and five grade twos at Saratoga, and a chance at the riding title. And if you're going to go to the Kentucky Derby, look, Manny Franco's going to go, right? Manny Franco's not winning a jockey title, and the chances are he probably won't win any of the grade ones. So, I mean, maybe he would, maybe not. But you're not going to give him a chance to ride the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. So you know he's going. But if you're saying to yourself, do I have a shot to win the Derby? If there's any doubt in your mind, chances are you're not going to win the Derby. And if you go down and you don't win the Derby, you're going to feel like an idiot. You say, look what I gave up, and now I got to sit around another 10 days or whatever it is before I can ride again. But that's a lot to give up, I'll tell you. So I don't know what kind of jockey colony we're going to get, but there's going to be a lot of interesting mounts available, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's a difficult equation for everybody involved. I know that there's a certain amount of precaution and necessity that everybody's dealing with, but I don't know if you heard Baffert the other morning, and I've also, you know, heard from a few jock agents and discussed the situation, and you know there had to be, or conceivably can be, you know, some practical approaches, and there's already some things, Steve, it seems, that are in place in other capacities. Think about, for instance, we've got the steeplechase jocks that are moving between Colonial and Saratoga each week now, and they will for the next several weeks. And there's separate housing completely away from all the other jocks in both places. And, you know, Santa Anita had the experience with the Star Mobile, you know, the Star vans, the Star RVs. There's got to be a way. There's so many, I would think, private aircraft options available to keep the jocks, you know, out of circulation of public transport. Bring them in. You know, Baffert said, bring them in on Thursday afternoon and have them sequestered and, you know, bubble wrapped for the weekend. I mean, to put these guys and gals potentially in. You know, sequestered for 10 days. It's
12 days, isn't it? August 24th.
Whatever it is.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, Churchill Downs, you know, made that decision, but you would.
They haven't. It's not. It's not.
You and I agree with Bob. I mean, it's got to improve on that. You can't expect an out of town jockey to sit around for 12 days waiting to ride in the Derby and give up his livelihood for that many days.
It doesn't. It just doesn't make any sense unless you've got I would say the number I've been using is 4 to 5 live mounts Friday and Saturday on stake horses. It just doesn't seem logical.
Not only does it not seem logical when you're dealing with the jockeys by having them do that, but then you go ahead and you're going to open the infield up to set 5.
Well, as I mentioned yesterday, and people may have seen even after it came up yesterday, they are back in consultation. They've gone back to Frankfurt. That seems increasingly unlikely when it comes to. There's nothing decisive yet about how that part's going to be handled. Let's be reasonable.
They want to keep people in blocks and separate. There's no way in the world. Who do you think is going to be in the infield? 75% of the people in the infield, they're going to be young people out there to party and have a good time. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't see how they would do it. I mean, nobody's going to social distance, and nobody's going to be wearing masks. I mean, some people may, but if you're going to put 5,000 or whatever it is, 5,000 people up there limiting, or 5,000 to 7,000 in a big area like that, people aren't going to just sit around and social distance all day. Like I said, it's going to be all 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old, 22-year-olds in there, and they're going to be wanting to have a good time. That's where they're going. They're going to risk anything to go there. They're not going to just go there and sit on the grass all day and not move.
That seems like a fair assessment of what transpires in the infield.
That's the infield experience. People are looking
yes,
for,
exactly.
You know, so
exactly.
I don't know what they're going to do, but maybe Frankfurt will step in and say this might not be a good idea. And you know, Churchill does not want to run the Derby in front of an empty grandstand.
No.
Yeah, and there's not going to be any general admission out in the back, which is fine because there's no way in the world you're going to social distance out there either. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen with the horses, and I don't know what's going to happen with the people. I have no clue what the Derby's going to be like this year. And I don't know what's going to be as far as protests down there. You know, there's a lot of crap going on down there.
Well, it's not crap. That's not an apt description, frankly.
No, I'm talking about tumult. I mean, I'm not saying it's not worthy or anything like that. I'm just saying there's a lot of stuff going around.
No, like the many before it. Today would be a good day to arrest Breonna Taylor's killers. Let's say that point blank.
Right, but you know, if they don't, that's still going to carry on. You know, in Louisville. Going to be there.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
You know, so the last thing that WWE needs is another disruption.
Well, that's not,
I know it's apples and oranges, but it's there. It exists. So, you know, it's going to be part of the quote, Derby scene, the Louisville scene, you know, however you want to put it. You know, it's just another thing that the Derby, again, looking at it strictly from the Derby, not looking at it from a cultural standpoint or a political standpoint. I'm just looking at it from a Derby standpoint. That's, you know, that's another thing they don't need there. There's enough going on with that race, trying to figure out how to pull this off.
Well, Steve, back to Travers. I'm glad we brought up Art Collector. And for those that haven't seen, let me go to my Marty yesterday. Marty McGee updated the perspective field. And as Marty wrote, certainly, no shortage of candidates. Art Collector, Anne O'Dor, Dean Martini, Shared Sense, Attachment Rate. I figured Dale would show up. Little Menace.
Well, of course, he's going to show up.
Little Menace, Steve Asmussen, as well as Rowdy Yates. Necker Island, now with Chris Hartman. Trident Hit, Brendan Walsh, and Winning Impression, Dallas Stewart. And Marty mentioned there might be another pair of big prices, a couple of long shots yet. So there's going to be close to a full gate on Sunday at Ellis.
Did you mention Shared Sense? I didn't hear.
Yes.
Shared Sense, okay. I figured he was going to go.
Yeah, he's going.
What about Major Fed?
He's waiting. He's going to train up. Greg Foley's going to train up the Derby.
Okay, so another one going to be going in off of a long layoff that we're not going to be able to figure out. You know, it'll be interesting to see how these horses do. But they certainly, you know, I can't say they're bucking the trend because there is no trend. I can't say they're bucking history because there is no history when you come to a September Kentucky Derby. But from a handicapping standpoint, it still makes things more difficult.
Steve, some thoughts beyond the top pair that we've discussed. Who else in that group for Saturday at Travers intrigues you? Who's got an outside win shot, and who's got exotic board hit shots?
Well, first of all, I mean, if you look at the race, the strategy and the way the race is going to be run, I mean, it looks pretty clear cut. I mean, Chivalry's going to the front, and you got to figure Uncle Chuck is going to be running second. And one thing about Uncle Chuck, by the way, you're talking about a horse going into the Derby, you know, in an unconventional way. You know, here's a horse going a mile and a quarter in his third start. And you can look at him and say, well, how is this horse going to be ready? But I'll tell you one thing, Baffert loves this horse. And I don't know, all you have to do is go on XBTV and watch this horse's workouts. Oh, my God, what a stride on this horse. Oh, he's got a reach on him like it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just, it'll be very interesting, and he's got some quickness as well, but he's got that big, big, long stride, which is going to help him, considering the fact that he's only had the two starts in his life, and, you know, didn't make his first start until the middle of June. But you got to figure he's going to be running second in this race. You know, Baffert always likes to be right up there, and he's got post three, so Baffert doesn't want him to get shuffled back, so he'll be right up there, sitting right behind Chivalry. Then you're going to have a group with, you know, with Tis the Law and First Line and Correct Caracaro right up there. You know, Country Grammar will be sitting behind them. And you got the two Come From Behind horses and Max Player and South Bend. So I think the strategy and just the whole logistics of the race looks pretty concrete at this time. I don't see any deviation from that. But, you know, listen, Tis the Law, should he win? Sure he should win. I mean, he's the best horse in the race. Although, you know, you've spoken to Baffert and I've spoken to Baffert. Baffert thinks he can beat him. You know, you want him to go into a race thinking that way. You're going to ship across country to run against a horse like that. But Baffert thinks so highly of this horse, he thinks he can beat him. So it's going to be hard to look beyond Tis the Law, and it's going to be hard to look beyond Uncle Chuck. But as you said before, you know, I'm a big Caracaro fan. And again, it's bittersweet, whatever he does, because the story I told you behind him about picking him out for a prominent owner looking for a Derby horse. So if he should run a big race, it's great because I did pick him out, and I feel good about that. The bitter part would be the fact that this guy didn't buy him. So it'll be interesting. I think he's going to run a big race. I think he's a very good horse. Again, he's only had three starts. We don't know that much about him. But for him to do what he did in the Peter Pan coming off a six-month layoff,
yeah,
I got to give him a shot in here, at least to be in the money. That's all he has to do. He doesn't have to win this race by any means. If he should finish second or third in the Travers, he's going to move forward. He's got he's got the pedigree to call him on a quarter, and the Travers to him is a prep. And another horse I'm giving a big shot to is to finish in the money is South Bend. He has a horse that he's had an interesting career. I mean, he started off his career. He won his first three starts. He won the Street Sense, so he's got a stakes win at Churchill Downs, and then he got put on the Stanley Huff put him on the grass, and you know he did well. He ran well in his first three starts, but then he just started losing a bit of form at the end there. So he wound up putting him on the dirt, and he finished a very fast closing second in the Ohio Derby, which got very good Thoroughgraph numbers, huge Thoroughgraph numbers, and he was flying at the end of that race. So, you know, by algorithms, I know Ultra-esque is speed there, but there's a lot of stamina in the bottom part of that pedigree. So he's the kind of horse that could pick up a piece of it. You know, do I see him winning from that far back? Yeah, no, I probably don't see him winning, but he could certainly finish in the money. But, you know, listen, it is hard to go against the two favorites. You know, we'll see if Max Player can run another big race. And he looks like a horse who's moving in the right direction. Country Grammar, you know, even though he won the Peter Pan, beating Caro got two full points faster on Thoroughgraph because Country Grammar had the absolute perfect trip. But is he a good horse? Yeah, and he's getting better. So the trap is an intriguing race, not even so much in who's going to win, but who's going to come up with in that second and third spot. Even if you want to give second to Uncle Chuck, if he is a budding superstar, then whoever finishes third in that race is going to get enough points to get into the Derby.
Yep.
And is going to move forward if he can run third in that race. Because a lot of these horses are all mile-and-a-quarter horses.
You know, even frankly, Caro, a fourth might get. He's got 20 going in, so 30 points might be enough.
Like you said, all he has to do is finish third.
I'm just going up and down. Uncle Chuck's got 20. So Baffert got. He didn't like me saying he needs to be third. Or I said at that point, I said third or better, and he said, "What are you talking about? Don't be. I don't want to hear that." Steve,
like I said, he's confident. He's very confident.
No, I'm just going up and down here. Who else is Max Player's got 40? So technically, he's not worried. Country Grammar's got the 50 already, so he's in good shape. Uncle Chuck and Caracaro, and then those that need kind of the proverbial walk off home run. Did you happen to catch Sid yesterday?
I was on a podcast for forever yesterday.
Well, the interesting development, on this Derby front, the potential of Mr. Fipke wanting to show up at Churchill and run Cheryl's Spite in the Derby, if there's room.
Okay. Well, listen, it's not the first time that he's run horses like that. I mean, he'll run his horses anywhere.
Well, he at the very least, he's going to show up apparently in the Pat Day Mile if he doesn't make Derby. And have you heard? You know, I forgot to ask Darren this the other day. Have you heard any update on the European slot? If one of the Euro horses is going to utilize their position, the free square?
I haven't heard a peep.
Yeah, either vine. That got very quiet. All right, we'll check on that.
Well, you know, the one thing, you know, you mentioned with Charles Sipke, by the way, is that, you know, it reminds me, if there's one thing that's consistent about the Kentucky Derby, and if you're handicapping the race now, if you start looking at a horse like, well, maybe South Bend, you look at a horse like Enforceable, but you go back last year, you had Country House, who's run second, finished second, I should say, 65-1. You look at Looking at Lee, who was second at 33-1. Commanding Curve was second at 37-1. Golden Soul was second at 34-1. Bluegrass Cat is second at 30-1. Shadow Citizen is second at 25-1. And Invisible Ink is second at 55-1. Do you realize how many horses have run second in the Kentucky Derby at monster prices and all closers?
Yep.
And a horse like Enforceable, I could just see him running second right in that 35-1 shot range. Or even the horse like South Bend, if he runs like third or fourth in the Travis. But, a horse like Enforceable, somewhere, that's going to happen this year. Big price horse is going to run second.
It happens in normal years. So what would stop it from happening in a crazy year? It's
exactly.
I love it. Well, Steve, we got a really nice way to, I can't say finish, because of course in New Jersey, Monmouth's is still going to run the Pegasus yet for some, kind of the last roundup, a 20-point, the winner gets 20 points. But Saturday and Sunday, we'll answer a lot of questions and we'll go from there. So
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the Travers. I find it fascinating to have the Travers being run before the Derby. And like I said, there's several horses in here that really do not have to win at all. Just move forward.
Yep.
Just show you belong. And whoever it is, whether it's Caracara, whether it's Country Grammar, whether it's South Bend, if you show you belong, you're going to move forward in the Derby. And all three of those are 1.25-mile horses.
Well, we've got a nice weekend ahead, I'm just getting word from KK. Kevin Kirstein is saying the European slot will not be used. So no Euro and no,
I didn't think so.
No Japanese horse in those two free squares. So that opens it up. Right now, the horse that benefits would be, right now, Finnick the Fierce would actually sidle up into number 20. And, of course, there's a couple of horses with points that would have to supplement, including Rushy and Dean Martini, Field Pass, Shared Sense. So there's a lot of movement.
I still thought I read somewhere that they're not going to put up the money for Dean Martini.
No matter what?
I know I read it somewhere. He's in a future wager. But I thought I had read that they're not going to put up the money. Maybe if you win the Ellis Park Derby.
Exactly. And they certainly won, the Ohio Derby, plenty of money, there was plenty of money made there, too,
right.
if they wanted. It's going to be pretty irresistible. If he runs well in Ellis, it's going to be hard to say no, right?
Exactly, yeah. Especially, let's say, Kinslaw gets beat. Boy, everybody's going to want to run the Derby then.
That's true. That's true. And Art Collector, too. So,
yeah.
Steve, let me press on. I've got to catch up with, we're going to have a visit with Joanne Adams and talk about the Belmont Child Care Association, their fundraiser. And Rich Eng is going to join us this morning. So I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. And we'll do some recapping next week. And we'll look forward to Tuesday's announcement of where Steve Haskin, where has he landed? He is like a roulette ball bouncing around the internet. What website slot? Place your bets.
Yes.
Nom de plume.
The eagle has landed again.
The eagle has landed. There you go. Steve Haskin, everybody. Let's take a break, probably our last of the morning. And when we come back, we're going to visit with Joanne, talk about the BCCA. Want to make sure that they get an opportunity without, the very popular gala that is one of the really fun parties of the year at Saratoga. And they're having a week-long virtual gala, virtual fundraiser. Joanne Adams from the Belmont Child Care Association joins us after this at The Races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Dolly America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Sirius XM Sports.